I am pleased to present an audio recording of the workshop on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali that I presented on Saturday, November 18th, 2017. In this session, we began the discussion on the five yamas. I hope you will enjoy the discussion and I look forward to hearing back from you with your comments and feedback. Okay, let's close the eyes. Sit up comfortably tall. Let's recite Om three times. Inhale. You can just softly open the eyes for a moment. Now, every time we study Patanjali, we always start with a little invocation. It's a short invocation to recognize Patanjali. So you can either look at the screen or just close the eyes and listen to me while I will recite that invocation.
Yogen chittasya padena vacha malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi.
And again, softly open the eyes. And one of you, maybe Kelly, you want to read the meaning in English?
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the munis, the sages, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on Ayurveda, of language through his treatise on grammar, Patanjala Mahabhashya.
Very good, yeah.
And the impurities of the chitta mind field through his treatise on yoga, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Excellent. Okay. So as you can see, Patanjali is given credit for three major fields of human understanding. You know, mind, body, and speech. And so he's given the credit to cleanse us of all these three impurities. Impurities of the body through Ayurveda, of the speech. Through his treatise on grammar. So his commentary on the grammar is one of the most exhaustive and one of the most respected commentaries on grammar. And, of course, from our perspective, cleansing the mind of all the impurities through yoga. So that's his claim to fame. The Yoga Sutras, for those of you who haven't attended any classes before, it's a text by Patanjali which gives us the basic knowledge and information about yoga. what yoga is, what the definition is, what the objectives are, how to attain those objectives, and what kind of practices will help us get there to get to the final goal of attaining the state of mind, which is also called yoga, the yogic state of mind. So it's all yoga. So what we have been doing in the past few sessions is to go through these sutras, one sutra at a time. So this is a little different from what we did in the previous sessions. Now I'm taking a little more time trying to understand each sutra and share with you what I understand, and also share with you what I don't understand in some of these sutras, and which is quite a lot, which I don't understand. So we'll all go through that again. Where I don't understand, I'd like to pick your brains and see if you can make more sense out of it. Okay, so that's how it goes. So far what we've done is a part of first chapter. There are four chapters, so we did a very small subset of chapter one to get introduced to yoga. Then we are jumping into towards the end part of chapter two, and then we'll go back to one and two, etc., etc. That's how we'll go. In chapter one, what we studied was the very basic definition of yoga, which is to calm the mind. Chitta vritti nirodha is the Sanskrit phrase for that, which means yoga by definition is to calm the mind under all situations, under all circumstances. And then we talked about the five vrittis, or the five causes of fluctuations of the mind, why mind goes through all these hoops, turbulence and all the fluctuations, all the anxieties and everything. So we worked, what are the causes of that, what are they called, and also the two things called abhyasa and vairagya, which is the practice, ongoing continuous practice of yoga, as well as the non-attachment part. So those are the two key phrases that Patanjali uses, key practices or key techniques to eventually calm the mind. And the reason why the mind is not calm is because of the ego. Ego takes over. And when the ego takes over, it goes and dips into the memory, which is called the samskara. And everything in the memory can be messed up because of the ego. When it stores everything in the memory, it also puts a label, good, bad, ugly, handsome. And it's that good, bad, ugly, handsome label which causes all the problems in life. So the idea is to eventually, through these practices, to somehow diminish the influence of all these samskaras which have labels put on them, and work only with the pure memory. Because if you work with pure memory, you will make pure decisions, pure actions in life. If you work with the labels, you will be messed up. That's the whole idea. So, introducing the concept of this eight limbs of yoga, this is the sutra that we did last time, but I'm going to repeat that, if that's okay with Kathy.
It is.
And the only two people who were here last time were Kathy and Mahi, right? Yeah. So, this is a sutra that's very important in terms of understanding the very basic benefits of yoga, so to say, and what yoga is and where does it lead us. Why do we practice the eight limbs of yoga? So again, to what we've been doing is, I'm going to speak the Sanskrit part and word by word, and you will repeat after me. Whether it makes sense or not, it doesn't matter. We'll just do that. We've been doing it for all these sessions now, okay? All right, so I'm going to break it up. Sanskrit is a very beautiful language, and there are ways in Sanskrit that you can combine multiple words into a single long word. So many of these statements will look like one single long word, and there are multiple words together. So what we have been doing is, I'll break up into individual words and then tell you the meaning of each one. So this one is, you will start repeating after me, yoganga.
Yoganga.
अनुष्ठानात् अशुद्धि क्षये ज्ञान दीप्ति ही आ विवेक ख्याते हे. Alright, so that's the full phrase in Sanskrit. Okay, we'll do that one more time, just because it's an important sutra, and I would like you to at least get to the sounds of this Sanskrit words. Okay, so again, yoganga.
Yoganga.
Anushthanat.
Anushthanat.
Ashuddhi kshaye.
Ashuddhi kshaye.
Jnana deeptihi.
Jnana deeptihi.
Avivek khyatehe.
Avivek khyatehe.
Alright. Okay. So, that's the Sanskrit part. It's beautiful because it really breaks down the benefits of the practice of yoga, these eight limbs of yoga. So it says, yoganga anushthanat means through the practice, through the diligent practice of yoga, the limbs of yoga. Yoganga means the limbs of yoga, through the diligent. Anushthan means a diligent practice, very established, very focused practice of something. That's called anushthana. So through a very focused, diligent practice of these eight limbs of yoga, ashuddhi kshaye. Ashuddhi means impurities. Kshaya means on the diminishing or on the elimination of these impurities. So what we're talking about is the impurities of the mind. And through the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, it says, you begin to diminish the influence of these impurities of the mind. What are the impurities of the mind that we're talking about in general? The ego-based stuff. Ego, what does it cause? It causes us anxiety, it causes us depression, anger, jealousy, hatred, greed, you know, all those things. And these are all considered to be the impurities of the mind. Right? Everything that's based on the memory, which is past, which is coming up from the past, which has been labeled as good, bad, ugly, handsome, as I always say, that causes problems. That's the impurity of the mind. So when you practice yoga, that's the first thing that will happen, is that these impurities begin to dwindle down. They begin to have less and less influence on us. They're not as strong anymore. Okay, so ashuddhi kshaye. Jnana deeptihi. When the impurities are not there, then you can see the light of wisdom coming through. Normally that light is covered by this ego. That light of pure intuitive wisdom is normally covered by the ego. So now, when the impurities are cleansed out, okay, then the tunnel is kind of open, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to say. Right? So when the impurities go down, the jnana deepti, jnana here is the pure, true, intuitive knowledge which will shine through. Deepti is light. Bright light is deepti. The knowledge shines through. And what happens at the end of that? What's lying at the end of the tunnel? Viveka khyati. That's the final goal and objective of the practice of yoga. It says all this happens, means until you reach the state of viveka khyati. What does that mean now? Viveka is pure discriminatory wisdom. Viveka is the ability to discriminate between real and unreal, right and wrong, good and bad, everything. It can really distinguish between the dualities that we face in life. That's viveka. Khyati is pure knowledge. Khyati is pure knowledge. It's still intuitive knowledge, basically. Intuition is the pure knowledge that we have, innate knowledge, wisdom that we have, all of us have, but we don't have access to it very easily. When that wisdom, that viveka khyati shines through, at that point in time, my vision is so clear that I know exactly who or what I am. So I have attained, at that point, I have attained self-realization, because I know I have realized my true identity, That's called self-realization. So through the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, now we are saying that we can attain self-realization. Because the impurities dwindle down, the light of wisdom shines through, and I am able to see myself clearly as to what or who I am. Okay, any questions on that?
So how do I know I have attained it? I'm not going to get a certificate at the end saying you attained wisdom now, right?
Right.
How do I know that?
Well, you have to get there first before you know how to know that. If you're not there, you have no way to understand that. That question cannot be answered by anybody. Because it's only you who will know that when you are there. That's it.
But the thing is, I read that the reason they speak Sanskrit in class is because it has more vibrational quality than English.
Whatever you've heard, it's okay. It's the language in which the whole knowledge of yoga was given to us. So I don't do it for the vibration purposes. I do it because it gives me an understanding of what the whole thing is.
So each one of those words has a lot of meaning.
Well, that's what I explained. You know, I've tried to do my best to explain what I know of Sanskrit. Yeah.
It's written in Sanskrit, but he's translating.
Sanskrit. What Camille is saying is there are some people who believe that the Sanskrit words themselves, when you speak them out, they create a certain vibration which is very positive. People say that. That's why people chant Vedic mantras and all that without even knowing their meaning. And they do it for hours and hours. I'm assuming there's a lot of truth in that, but I just don't have a good feel for that statement, for that fact, what people mention. I do it because I want to understand what it says. You know, I want to really go to the depth of each statement by understanding the actual words and actual meanings. For me, it explains the things better. That's all. Okay.
One question, and maybe you might be going through that, is you say ego is the main reason of the duties and things. And so how do you, these eight things that take you on how you own ego?
That's the whole purpose of yoga, is to diminish the influence of the ego. So it's all meditation eventually. When you sit and meditate, everything slows down. Okay, when everything slows down, then those turbulences in the mind, they also slow down. When they slow down, then ego doesn't have much to do, because ego depends on those turbulations, on the tribulations and all the perturbations in the mind. If you can slow everything down, then things begin to clarify. It's all meditation, eventually. Yoga is equated with meditation.
So it means that your thoughts and thinking will change? That's what you're saying?
Yes. Right now it is influenced by the ego. When it changes to a more positive side, then the ego doesn't get to play a role. Then we are more driven by the intuition. You know, that knowledge that shines through, light that shines through, then we are driven by that light.
The pure intellect?
The pure intellect. The pure intellect is what we are looking for, instead of the ego. Intellect, which is receiving its light from the intuition, not from the ego. That's the whole purpose of the practice of yoga. Okay. Anything else on this one? You're okay?
What's the exact word for instinct?
Hmm?
Intuition.
Hmm.
What's the meaning of intuition?
What's the meaning of intuition? The intuition is... That's a good question.
It's your inner voice.
It's the inner wisdom that we all have. But that inner wisdom has been covered by the ego. The ego does not want you to look at that inner wisdom. because then it has no role to play. And ego is powerful at this time. Ego controls our life. Now, when we have access to that inner, pure innate, it's called innate inner wisdom, which is driven by the, it's called prajna. Patanjali uses the term prajna. Prajna is the term used for inner intuition and wisdom.
So it's kind of whatever is in your life, just accept it. That's what.
Whatever is in your life, accept it without getting involved by the ego. Without getting engaged by the ego. Ego always likes to work based on what it likes, what it dislikes. Okay. See, there are two things. In Sanskrit also they call it, there are two terms. One is called prayas, one is called shreyas. I don't know if you have ever heard these terms.
I've heard shreyas. Yeah, I've heard about shreyas.
Shreyas is the name of a guy, I'm sure.
No, well, quality as well. As a quality.
Yes. Right. Shreyas means what is good for you. Shreyas means goodness. What is desirable for you. Prayas is the opposite, what is pleasant for you.
Priya and
Shreya. Priya and Shreya. Yeah, Priya and Shreya. That is the Sanskrit word, Priya and Shreya. Which means Shreyas is one thing that is desirable, which is appropriate. Prayas is something that you like. Mm-hmm. So this piece of cake, which is prayas, may not be Shreyas for us. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea. So what the ego does, it only picks the prayas. It only likes to pick the what's pleasant for us. Whereas when we are driven by this intuitive wisdom, it allows you to pick only the shreyas, not the prayas. What's desirable for you, what is appropriate.
For example, festivals, we always like the prayas, the pleasant things.
Absolutely,
but
always.
The stress is the reason why we celebrate the festival. That's the stress. Like Diwali we
prayers is important. Prayers is important because it tells you, you know, what you like. But shreyas will let you decide whether you want to enjoy that or not. That piece of cake, whether you should have it or not, don't allow the ego to decide that. Allow the intellect to decide that. That's the whole idea. And yoga, practice of yoga will help you get there. That's what this guy is saying. Practice of yoga will help you get there eventually. Okay, so this is just a list of all the 8 limbs of yoga. And somebody must have been giving a talk here before I came to the class this morning. So it's already listed here. By somebody else. Okay. So we are going to go through the names of these 8 limbs of yoga. Okay. So again, repeat after me. Yama. Niyama. Asana. Pranayama. Pratyahara. Dharana. Dhyana. Samadhi. These are the Ashtavangani. Ashtavangani. Let's repeat that. Ashtavangani.
Ashtavangani.
That breaks into Ashtav Angani. Angani means the limbs. Ashtav means 8. So these, Patanjali says, are the 8 limbs of the practice of yoga. 8 limbs. Okay. So again, would you like to repeat that one more time? Yama.
Yama.
Niyama.
Niyama.
Asana. Pranayama,
Pratyahara,
Dharana, Dhyana,
Samadhi.
You have to remember these because these are very important. Alright? This is just a list. Yamas and Niyamas. So Yama, essentially, these are, Yamas and Niyamas are 5 each. And they are, in a sense, moral, ethical, and social guidelines. So once you follow these yamas and niyamas,
you can lead a very peaceful life in your own way, in your social structure, in your own self, within and without, basically. Okay? So you can lead a very peaceful life when you follow these yamas and niyamas. On the other side, if you do not follow these yamas and niyamas, you will lead a pretty miserable life. Okay? So yamas and niyamas, like I said, are the guidelines for social, ethical and moral behavior. Asana is the sitting posture. Asana comes from the root word as in Sanskrit, which means to sit. Asana is a sitting posture. Okay? So, and then asana, because Patanjali only talked about meditation. He doesn't talk about warrior poses and all that. So it's meditation only. In his view, the only action you will do is meditation, which leads to no action. Eventually. Pranayama is breathing practices. All the different practices related to prana or the vital life energy, which is controlled by the breath. Pratyahara is
inward
focus. Inward focus. When you are able to turn the senses inward, that's called pratyahara. Not being influenced by outside influences, outside of the senses. Then dharana, dhyana and samadhi, these are the three stages of meditation, okay, in a sequence. Dharana is the initial state of focus, dhyana is the actual practice of meditation on your mantra or whatever object you pick, and samadhi is the ultimate state of the mind where your mind has now been completely arrested of all extraneous thoughts. That's samadhi. So these are the eight limbs of yoga. Now, Patanjali, in a later chapter, in chapter 3, he says that these first five, he calls them external, up to pratyahara, and then the last three, which are three stages of meditation, he calls them internal. Okay, they are the internal limbs, and the first five are the external limbs. External to the mind, so to say. But then there is this final state of samadhi. Samadhi also has multiple stages. The final state or the stage of samadhi is called the nirbija samadhi. Nirbija means seedless. That means no thought whatsoever stays in your mind at that point. Zero thought. That's seedless. No seed of any samskara can come up so that nothing will happen in the mind. So from that point of view, he says all eight are external. Because that's the ultimate inner view of yourself when you have nothing going on. There's not even a seed of thought left in the mind. That becomes seedless. That's called the nirbija samadhi. So this is just a way of recognizing internal, external limbs of yoga. When reading different commentaries, you know, some commentators seem to think that we should practice them in a sequence. First, understand the yamas and niyamas, then only start practicing other aspects of yoga. But then some say, you know, everything should go on simultaneously. I believe in the second category where everything should be done together. You know, you don't put them in one sequence after the other.
Is there a priority in the eight? Samadhi is not possible.
Meditation is the priority. Okay. Ultimately, the whole purpose of practice of yoga is to meditate. That's it. That's the priority, in a sense. Okay. But then everything else builds up to that. That's the whole point. Okay, so now the five yamas. What are the five yamas? That's all repeated now. Ahimsa.
Ahimsa.
Satya.
Satya.
Asteya.
Asteya.
Brahmacharya.
Brahmacharya.
Aparigraha.
Aparigraha.
Okay. So, one more time, because yamas and niyamas are important to remember. All right. Ahimsa.
Ahimsa.
Satya.
Satya.
Asteya.
Asteya.
Brahmacharya.
Brahmacharya.
Aparigraha.
Aparigraha.
All right. What do they mean? We'll get into the details, but again, very, very simply, I think you can read. You want, one of you want to read? You want to read the meaning?
Yamas consist of nonviolence, truthfulness, non-stealing, continence or celibacy, and non-greed.
Non-greed. Okay, so these are the five yamas. And we'll come to some more details on these as we go along. Okay. Now this is a kind of a qualifying statement on these yamas and niyamas. All right. So again, some of these sutras I'm going to skip in terms of repetition, but some of these are important, so I'm going to ask you to repeat after me. All right. Jati.
Jati.
Desha.
Desha.
Kala.
Kala.
Samaya.
Samaya.
Now the next word is anavachinnaha.
Anavachinnaha.
Sarvabhaumaha.
Sarvabhaumaha.
Mahavratam.
Mahavratam.
Mahavratam. Okay, now what does that mean? Jati. Jati is the
caste
or the birth or what kind of birth you have. It's all jati. Comes from ja, means to be born. How, in what form you are born, whether it's caste or some place or country or family or all that is called jati. Desha is location, place where you are born. Jati, desha. Kala is time frame. Okay. Jati, desha, kala, samaya. Samaya means time. Time of the day, time of the year, etc. That's samaya. Kala is the time frame. Okay. Right. Kala means past, present and future, that kind of kala. Samaya is actual time. And anavachinna. Anavachinna means not limited by, not controlled by, not established by, not determined by. Okay? That's the anavachinna. Sarvabhauma. Bhumi is place, a location. Sarvabhauma is irrespective of place, irrespective of location, irrespective of your situation in life. Doesn't matter what situation you are in, it applies to every single situation in life, every single state in your life. Mahavratam. Vratam means, it's like a vow you take. Vratam is a vow. Mahavratam means?
Great.
Great, super, supreme. So what it's saying is, irrespective of the birth you have, the time frame you are in, irrespective of the country you live in or the place you live in, makes no difference. If you want to be a yogi, you need to follow these guidelines. That means no violence, no telling a lie, etc., no stealing, etc., etc., zero.
So, can I ask a question about that? In some forums, the brahmacharya, the celibacy, is said to be for renunciates, and that for non-renunciates, the meaning is more of energy conservation.
Yeah. That's
so
fine.
So just having different meanings.
Different meanings, yeah, sure. Depends on, you know, what your path is. You know, if you are a sannyasi and you've already given up the lifestyle of a householder, then it is complete total celibacy. If you are a householder, you know, then it is continence, so to say, or moderation in some sense. Yeah. The literal meaning of brahmacharya, brahma means supreme consciousness, actually. Brahman is supreme consciousness.
Charya means to live in something or to float in something, to be in somewhere. So to be in supreme consciousness is the literal meaning. But that's not the practical meaning. Practical meaning is sexual abstinence, in a sense.
I take classes at an ashram here, and they said that celibacy can be practiced, that they believe that people don't really need sex. That's what they said. I asked specifically.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, once you have renounced the whole world, when you have renounced the whole...
Well, they're saying anybody, like nobody needs it, like you don't have to have it.
Well, then it's a matter of how you understand that. I don't know. I don't know what that means. If you're a householder and you want to propagate your family, your family, then you have to have sex. Without that, unless you are a yogi, you know, these yogis can create other humans without sex. Right?
Doesn't that cause problems, though?
But if you're a normal human being, you need sex to have two kids, you know. And if you need kids in your life, you do need kids, right? That, again, let's... I'm not sure what that statement means, but in our ancient scriptures, you know, there are statements like all these people were created without actual sexual involvement. Virabhadrasana, we call it Virabhadra, warrior pose. Who was Virabhadra? He was Shiva's son.
Right.
But he was born without sex because Shiva was not married at that time. Mind power. So in those days, these people could do it, but... You and I doubt it. So these great vows are universal, not limited by class, place, time, or situation or circumstance in life. They're very strongly recommended by Patanjali. Must be followed in totality, universally, with no regard to birthplace, etc. Now, what happens in situations where your livelihood depends on violence? For example, a fisherman, everyone gives that example. A fisherman has to kill fish to survive. He has no other way to survive. So is that good, bad, or what? Will that be allowed in Patanjali's view? That's a food for thought. I'm not going to give you an answer for that.
What's the question?
Patanjali on the one hand says that you have to follow these guidelines irrespective of your situation in life. Now, the question is, you are a fisherman and you are only able to survive by killing fish. Are you violating this value of ahimsa? Well, I mean, the stories are there.
I can just relate to that, the question that you have. So that's like karma yoga.
Yeah,
that's
isn't in Bhagavad Gita say to follow your dharma and your karma?
Right.
If you're a soldier, sorry buddy, that's your job.
That's right. Then my only question is, are you violating these guidelines by Patanjali by doing that and still be able to attain your nirvana?
There are no exceptions to these rules at any time, in any place, for anyone aspiring to be a yogi.
Well, that's Bryant's commentary.
See you next month.
You're leaving?
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, that's Bryant's opinion. There are other commentators who don't quite necessarily agree with this. Okay.
Wisdom.
Yes, but only if it is.
Don't have yet? Oh, that one.
only if you have that. To get there, we have to follow all this anyway. Well, that's what Patanjali is saying. To get to that pure intuitive wisdom, you have to follow these guidelines of Yama. So until then, no killing. When you get that clarity of thought, then you may decide whether you want to kill or not.
But ahimsa may not necessarily mean not killing.
Well, himsa is killing. Ahimsa means non-killing, non-hurting.
Himsa could be violence.
Violence, killing is violence in a sense. Again, difference of thinking, and I'm going to leave it to you to decide. King and soldier can kill only during war, you know. You know, there's a story that I'm reminded of. In a war, it's a war going on to battle between two enemies, and they eventually come to combat, you know, hand-to-hand fight. So these two warriors, they each have a dagger in the hand. One is able to subdue the other. So this guy is down on the ground. He puts his foot on his chest, raises his dagger to kill him. And while the dagger is up here, this guy spits on his face out of disgust. And his hand freezes there. When he spits on his face, his hand freezes there. Now this guy is in a miserable state. He says, "Kill me! I'm ready! Why don't you kill me?" He says, "I can't." "So why?" You know what he says? He says, "Look, I'm a soldier. My job is to kill my enemy. I'm not a murderer. Because you spat on my face, my ego was woken up and I'm angry at you. Anger, if I now strike you out of anger, I'm murdering you. I will be a murderer, not a killer. I don't want to do that. I have to wait till my anger is down, till my ego is not playing any role, and then I'm doing my duty as a soldier, then I can kill you. So wait." I thought that's a very beautiful story. Yeah. Now these are the five niyamas. Okay, so again, repeat after me. Shaucha.
Shaucha.
Santosha.
Santosha.
Tapas.
Tapas.
Swadhyaya.
Swadhyaya.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
These are the niyama, niyamaha, niyamaha, niyamas. Again, one more time. Shaucha.
Shaucha.
Santosha.
Santosha.
Tapas.
Tapas.
Swadhyaya.
Swadhyaya.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Okay, so these are the five niyamas. So remember, yamas are more oriented towards social interaction. Yamas apply to interacting with others. Niyamas are applied to the self, to yourself. Okay, for the most part. All right. So, somebody want to read the meaning quickly? Shyamal?
Niyamas consist of purity, contentment, accepting but not causing pain, study of spiritual books, and worship of God, self-surrender.
I'm not sure I like that translation, accepting but not causing pain. Not sure. That's Swami Sachidananda's translation, I think. Okay. Anyway, very, very quickly then, you know, what these mean. Purity is purity of the body, mind, etc., environment. We always talk about that. That's purity or the shaucha. Santosha is contentment, being okay with what you have, not. It doesn't mean don't strive for more. It just means be happy with what you get as a result of your striving.
See, I have a big problem with that statement, because how can you not strive for more? I mean, how can you strive for more without an ego? like without your drive for more, which is what ego
was. No, drive for more is, the point is, we have to start working through the intellect, not the ego. If the ego decides something, then it's going to cause eventually cause problems. If the intellect decides that, you look, I'm in this job, okay, and for me to be able to do more, I need to become the president of this company. Then I can do a much better, effective job. That's decided by the intellect. The ego would say, if I become the president, I'll be, the boss, and I can control everybody and the hell with everybody else, I can take care of it. That's the ego. So the question, you always have to eventually see who is making the decision. Is the intellect or the ego? If the intellect is making the decision, then you will be happy with whatever is the outcome of your effort, of your endeavor, of your striving. Then you're not attached to the outcome. Then you're attached to the job that's at hand. That's all you have to do. And that's only done by the intellect, not by the ego.
Even if that consists of... So even if my intellect is telling me I need to do something to get better, and that involves... Let's say I have to defeat some person for that purpose.
What do you mean defeat?
So for example, if I have a contender for that same role.
Yes.
So I have to defeat him to get to that role. So is that ego or is that still...
No, you have... What the intellect will tell you is to look that you have to do your best. So you will put your best foot forward, make every effort to... If you have to study for it, if you pass an exam for it, if you do whatever it takes...
Except playing tricks on the other person to...
Tricks, depending on, again, whether are the tricks driven by the ego.
Okay.
If they are driven by the ego, no. Then it will cause problems somewhere down the line. May not be today, maybe tomorrow. Definitely cause problems. Intellect, it will not cause problems. It's an iterative process of cleansing the mind, of understanding where the intellect is involved and where the ego is involved. You may not be able to decide it today. Today, you might say it's an intellect, it may actually be the ego. But you don't know the distinction because the mind is not clear yet.
Exactly. That's. I think for me, I don't have a lot of stress or anything like that, but for me it's essentially, I like to always go more and more and more. And the thing is, many times I kind of think about whether, and for getting more, sometimes I have to go over someone. So if I'm doing that, I always think, is this my ego just... crushing that person, or...
Absolutely, you have to think about that, yes.
Right, that's my biggest battle.
That you have to make that decision. Yeah. That's what it is. Ego will lead us into problems eventually. There's no question about that. It's not just Patanjali. Everywhere it says that. Bhagavad Gita says that. Patanjali says that. And in our life, we have experienced that in any case. So we don't have to go too far to understand that.
Like in that case, if the actions... Like if you have a goal and the actions that you're taking are with the intention of meeting that goal, not with the intention of being better than another person.
Right. I see that, but the problem is there are always detractors who come in your way, and I absolutely enjoy destroying those guys.
No, but the enjoy means, is it the ego that's enjoying it? Or
I don't know.
What you have to clarify.
These guys come in front of me. I mean, there's been situations, right? I've reached a level because... There have always been other people who have tried to stop, I kind of make it a little exaggerated a little bit, but there have always been other people who have tried to stop me, and so far, I've had a very good,
No, that's fine,
But I always think whether what I did to those guys who I came in front of, was that right, wrong? I have no idea.
No.
And there are still things I need to do, and same thing is going to exist.
Slowly, it's a slow process. It's a slow process of cleansing the mind of all the impurities, and then slowly that light will shine through that light, like the sutra said, and that light will guide you whether you're doing the right thing or not the right thing.
So it depends on the motive, right?
Motive is decided by the ego or the intellect. That's, I keep coming back to the same thing. Who is deciding that motive?
And that's what I was thinking. The intention to whether the transcendent person is, so that you ultimately attain the noble objective that you have set for yourself. Then it's okay that you are trying to do that so that you can show you are better than him. And that's the ego, I guess.
But then, you know, the question again is, would you be successful in doing that every time? There are going to be situations when things don't work out, but then are you miserable at that point?
And the outcome, how do you think?
Can you take the outcome with the same calm mind as you take the both negative outcome and the positive outcome should be taken with the same calm frame of mind.
What is that saying at the temple that's on the wall that you do an action, but...
Karmanya vadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachan.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
you do your duty, but don't accept the results.
That's on the wall of every temple, every office, every... In India, if you go there, it's on the every wall. What's that?
Even though no one understands it fully.
Yeah, no one understands it. No one really, yeah, that's true.
If you make effort, you would.
Yeah.
But that's the list of priority in
the life of people's lives. That's a very beautiful shloka from Bhagavad Gita. And all it says is karmani. Karmani means in the act, in the action. Eva, karmani, in the action alone is your adhikara. Your responsibility, your duty is only on karmani. Karmani is the action that you do. Na ma phaleshu kadacha. That means not on the results. Phala means the results. So you have no control over the results of your actions. No control over the outcome of what you're doing through, going through now. Your job is only to do it. Understand your duty thoroughly, for which you have to do a lot of work. To understand what your duty is, you have to really do a lot of work. A lot of swadhyaya is involved there. A lot of study is involved there. To understand what your duty is. But having done that, do your work and then don't look for the, don't expect any outcome out of it. Outcome will happen. And whatever happens then, enjoy it. Live with it. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
I think the main purpose, I know, kind of generalizing, is to just spread love. Because if you get into all this mind stuff, like, because I know how it is to work. It's like you're forced to work with people that you don't necessarily get along with. But people can get into so many mind games and stuff. And if you just go in there trying to be full of self-love, and then it will spread outward, but you can just like kill yourself with these people.
Yes, self-love again is all based on the pure intellect.
And I just think about how society is right now. It's so full of ego and people not connecting. They call it being connected on your cell phone. You're totally disconnected. So I think it's the complete like ego. We're just driven by ego. Not, I don't feel like I am, but I mean, I feel like the society is.
Well, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is all about us. It's not about the society. He doesn't talk about the society as much, very little, if at all. He says, you have to cleanse your own self, that's it. His focus is cleansing the mind, individual mind, your own mind, not of anybody else. His focus is the self, individual. Right now, my job is to cleanse my mind of all the impurities. That's all I'm trying to do.
People can sit on a mountain and like meditate all day. What good are they doing in society? And well, I'm a vegan, so
whatever they are doing, I'm not concerned about them. That's the point I'm making.
But I mean, isn't that kind of what he's saying? Regardless whether you're on a mountain or going into
work. Exactly. It doesn't matter where you are. Cleanse yourself. Cleanse yourself of all the impurities.
Once you do that, I think the actions that come out will be the pure actions. It doesn't mean you will stop taking the actions, but I guess the actions that will come out will be without ego, and they'll be pure actions, which would be...
It's only after we cleanse the mind that pure self-love will spread out automatically. Then you don't have to think about it. Then you don't have to criticize others. Then you don't have to think of what others are doing. Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is all about cleansing my mind. For me, it's for me to cleanse my mind of all the impurities. There's nothing else in the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. He doesn't talk.
If you're walking down the street and there's a hurt animal or a homeless person that's suffering or a child or what that's being abused, what?
Right. So my intellect will tell me that this is a good place now to help the person because he needs help. It's not my ego. My ego will say, I don't want to do anything because, you know, this might get me into trouble. You know, if I help somebody on the street, this might have a knife and he might strike me. That's what the ego might tell me. If my pure intellect is telling me something, and if I feel that I need to help somebody, I will go ahead and help, no matter what the outcome is then.
I think what she's saying, that you are spending 100% of your time doing this, which is not true. This is just one of the things that you are doing, self-cleansing. The rest of the things that you are going to continue to live your life as usual, but as part of that, the actions you are taking, you know, if you are clean, self-clean, then you know those actions are made
pure,
driven by intellect rather than ego.
Very good.
I mean, I bring it up because I'm in the yoga community, and there's a lot of that self-absorption where they're not doing anything for anybody. So, and I'm a huge, as you know, I do everything for free, so I'm a huge, I give back to society, but I see it all the time.
Just keep,
people spend so much time.
Just keep doing it. Don't worry about the others.
Right. But I'm just wondering like how it applies like to everybody. So that's why I'm asking.
Again, don't worry about the others. It does not apply to anybody else. It's Yoga Sutra applies only to you.
I'm trying to understand it though. So
yes.
How I can apply it to myself.
But. Because everybody's at a different stage, right? You might be a little higher. Somebody's still climbing.
Well, I'm just trying to understand the definition. Like
thinking that.
Yeah. Definition of?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because, like, if other people are doing it, it's confusing, but that's
right.
This is what I see, so. I mean, you're a good exception to that rule. I mean, as far as being kind, and I always say that to you.
Yeah, again, but we're not talking about others, we're talking about ourselves. I'll keep repeating that, Camille. Because Yoga Sutra is all about myself. It's not about others. I do not judge others. I do not look at others. I do my job, and I do it without any involvement of the ego. I mean, I'm saying this is what the goal is. That's what Patanjali is saying. The goal of Patanjali's yoga is to cleanse your own mind, irrespective of what others are doing. It's a very difficult goal, but that's what it is. That's why he also said that it's not easy to attain what you're trying to do, but that's what the goal is. It's hard. Especially it's hard in this world where we are surrounded by so many different people, so many different ideas, ideologies, and you know, there's TVs blaring all the time. And every channel has their own ego involved in it, whether it is CNN or any other channel. And you hear all kinds of junk. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you want to get corrupted by all that. Just listen to everything. Use your own intellect, not the ego.
Well, it's just like you go into yoga class, not necessarily yours sometimes, though, depending on who's in there. But I notice that people compete a lot, so I'm just saying that's how it is, and so that's what I've seen
yeah,
a lot. Even
exactly.
In the yoga world.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of competition, a lot of negative thinking. When you see, even in the yoga world, the people are the same, whether they are yoga practitioners or yoga teachers or yoga students, they are still people. And they have their own egos, they have their own problems. Everyone does. It's very true. Okay, let's do one more. All right. So it's the sutra is Vitarka Badhane Pratipaksha Bhavanam. So the first statement is Vitarka Badhane Pratipaksha Bhavanam.
Pratipaksha Bhavanam.
Okay, what does that mean? Vitarka means when there is negative tendencies, negative thoughts in the mind, things which are not pleasant to the mind, etc., etc. That's vitarka. Badhane means when they disturb you, when they badha is to disturb you, distract you, when they overpower you or something like that. That's badhane. So when these negative thoughts overpower you, then what do you do? Negative thoughts. Thoughts like anger, jealousy, hatred, greed, all these are negative thoughts. Okay, depression, anxiety, okay, all these negative thoughts, trampling over somebody like Shyamal wants to do sometimes. Okay, what do you do at that time? He says then, pratipaksha bhavanam, try to bring pratipaksha. Pratipaksha means the opposite bhavana, opposite emotion, opposite feeling. So if you are angry, can you try to become compassionate just for a moment? At that, swing your mind back to compassion.
I'm just thinking of my reverend. One time she said, when you have difficulty with someone at your workplace, that you really should say a prayer for those people. Versus wanting to...
Hell no.
And I remember all of us just thought, well, that sounds nice, but how do you really do that?
Yeah, it's very hard. That's where the study of yoga comes in. You know, you... It's that taking a moment away from that thought, from whatever you're doing. Take a step back, one moment, and then briefly see if you can swing by that negative, opposite thought. It's not easy.
It's not a question of easy. Again, I go back to Bhagavad Gita for this, where, you know, I mean, the whole story behind there is that Krishna told Arjuna, dude, they might be your relatives, but your job, go get rid of them.
Wipe them out.
That's your job. You know,
that's exactly.
What, I mean, he kind of begged and pleaded that these are my uncles and brothers, and I can't kill them. I'm emotionally. Right. He was like, no. This is your job. So, you know, going back to my thing is, that's how I view it, is these guys are detractors to the betterment of my project or my company. It's my job.
Sure, that's fine.
I think I wonder if you could do that and then say a prayer for them at the same time.
Yeah, right before I strike that dagger, yeah, I'll say a prayer.
Yeah, no, that's fine, you know. Like you rightly said, it's all, if it's all coming from the pure intellect, no problem with that. See, there, Krishna was at a stage in life where he has no ego. He knows exactly what's right. He has overpowered all the limitations of the ego. He's the supreme being. So what he decides is the right decision. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, the one thing though is, okay, talking about prayer, you know, when I've faced these kind of circumstances, right, I've always thought about, you know, am I, you know, that conflict in mind always exists, is when I'm going forward, you know, I can relate very well to Arjuna, because when I'm going forward with that battle and I decide, okay, it's time for me to get rid of this person, it's just so much, I wouldn't say stress, but it's like, I always think, is this the right thing to do?
Yeah.
But always... That conflict
good. That's a good conflict to have, because then that's what is eventually going to cleanse you out of all the negative stuff. As long as you can step back and reflect back on it and you know, look at it from the positive side.
But that's the self-study, right? Is to realize that something, whether it's a person or your own thoughts, are disturbing the sattvic mind, right? That it's really not what other people are doing or what people are saying. It's what we're, the story we're telling ourselves. It's our own mind fluctuation that we're responsible for. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter what is happening really out there.
Yes.
Like that's, to me, that's when it says to think the opposite, mm-hmm. is to try to keep in mind that it's not the actions, words, or behaviors of others. It's the labels that I'm putting on those things that mm-hmm. are causing my feelings of negativity about it.
Right.
And like taking that step back before reacting.
That's very true. That's very true. Yes. So, vitarka badhane pratipaksha. This is it's considered to be a very important sutra because it tells you how to negate any negative stuff that's going on in the mind. Okay, and the next sutra will tell you a little more about all this. Okay, so opposite thought. Okay, so this goes into a little more depth, and I think this is too much of too many words here, so let's not repeat one word at a time. I'm just going to read this sutra for you and then explain the meaning, okay? So it's vitarka hinsadayaha krita karita anumoditaha lobha krodha moha purvakaha mridu madhya adhimatraha dukh ajnananta anantaphalaha iti pratipaksha bhavanam. Okay, now these are the Sanskrit words. And it's defining what we are saying when we say pratipaksha bhavana. Pratipaksha bhavana is the opposite thought. So what does it mean to have opposite thought, or what does it do to us? Okay. So when vitarka is the negative thoughts, like I said, vitarka, hinsa adayaha. Hinsa means
violence.
Adi means etc. Mm-hmm. Violence, etc. What are we talking about? All negative thoughts. Violence, anger, jealousy, hatred, greed, etc., etc. They are all called negative tendencies. Hinsa adayaha. Adayaha means etc. Okay, hinsa, etc. So when negative thoughts of violence, etc., now, what kind of thoughts are these? Krita. Krita means done by yourself. Okay, so let's take violence for example, right? Whether you hurt somebody, slapping somebody, or shooting somebody, or kicking somebody, that's violence done by you. Karita means you get it done by somebody else. You hire somebody. I'll pay you $1,000, you go and shoot this guy for me. Okay, then you are involved by hiring somebody to do it. Anumodita means you're not directly involved. Somebody else does some firing, some shooting, but you approve of it. Anumodita. You're not against it. You approve of it. All right? So these are the three ways you can do harm. You can do it yourself. You can hire somebody to do it. Or you can approve of somebody else doing it to someone else. Three ways. Now, they could be out of lobha, krodha, or moha. Now, what are these three? Lobha means?
Greed.
So, you could do this out of greed, or out of anger, or out of delusion. Moha means delusion. You're deluded. Krodha is anger. How do you get angry? Multiple ways. You all know. Right? We all know how to get angry and how to feel that rage coming out. Right? And that can prompt us to do violence. Anger always does. Greed. Okay? This guy has so much money and I don't have enough money. He has this kind of property and material wealth and all that and I don't have any. If I can kill him, I might be able to grab all his property. Something like that. So lobha, greed, can also cause a lot of violence. And moha, what's moha? And a good example of moha? Delusion?
Desire.
So the example that comes to my mind is, for example, let's take these Islamist, what are they called?
Terrorists.
Right? Terrorists. What do their main thinking is that, look, all people who do not believe in Islam are
evil.
And they have to be eliminated. And if I do that, if I do that act of elimination of all those who are not Islamists, then I'll go to heaven. That's their belief. To me, that's moha, delusion. They are deluded by the by this thought that by eliminating all these harmless, innocent people, just because they are not following my faith, and by eliminating those from the face of this earth, I'll go to heaven. That's what these people do. They just strap themselves with the bombs all over and then just jump into a big crowd of innocent people and then just kill them. Under the deluded belief that they will go to heaven. That's moha. So your act of violence could be caused by anger, greed, or delusion. That's the next one. Then the next is mridu, madhya, and adhimatra. You could be, it could be a very mild effort, mridu, madhya, or is medium, or adhimatra is
extreme.
Okay, it's like those mild, medium, and you know they have flavors. Hot, spicy, and medium. So, it could be, in terms of intensity, whether it's mild, medium, or extreme, okay? So, all these variables are, he's giving us all these different variables of how these things could be playing up in your mind, okay? But no matter what category your act falls into, in all these permutations and combinations, the end result is dukkha and ajnana, anantaphala. That's the main purpose of this statement, is that if you do violence based on any one of these 27 characteristics, 3 times 3 times 3 is 27, right? So you can get into 27 of these permutations and combinations. But that's only broad category. It could be millions, because when you are, for example, you know, when you're doing something, whether you're doing it yourself or you're getting it done by somebody else, it could be any shade in between. You could be doing it yourself and having somebody else help you also, and any level of engagement by the other person. So the variety is infinite. But in any case, the point is, no matter where you fall into that category, eventual end result is pain and suffering. That's what he's saying. Dukkha, dukkha means suffering. Ajnanam is ignorance. You eventually end up being purely ignorant and miserable. If you can realize that, then that will be called pratipaksha bhavanam. That's the negative, opposite thought. That's the definition of this statement. I mean, that's the meaning of this statement. Okay, it's a lot to think about, but again, one of the very important sutras from the point of view of understanding how to deal with a situation, especially when it is involving negative thoughts. Love for hatred, compassion for injury. Okay, so does that make sense then? Okay. Now, the next one is this sutra in Patanjali's sutras, you know. Now he starts telling us, once you are established in any one of these values in a very deep state, you are really fully established in that value, what happens then? Okay? So this one says, again, you want to repeat after me, this is a small one. Ahimsa.
Ahimsa.
Pratishthayam.
Pratishthayam.
Tatsannidhau.
Tatsannidhau.
Vaira.
Vaira.
Tyagaha.
Tyagaha.
Okay, so it is Ahimsa Pratishthayam.
Ahimsa Pratishthayam.
Tatsannidhau.
Tatsannidhau.
Vairatyagaha.
Vairatyagaha.
All right. Now, what does that mean? Pratishtha means once you are established. Pratishthayam means once you are established in that value called Ahimsa. That means you have completely given up all violence of any kind. No, you don't hurt anybody. You absolutely have no thought of hurting anybody through mind, body, and speech. You can hurt through mind, body, and speech. You know that, right?
And you're talking about hurting yourself as well.
As well. Other. Absolutely. Everything. Hurting yourself, hurting others, hurting the environment, any hurt. If you're fully established in the value of Ahimsa, okay, then all hostilities will cease in your presence. Even those who have come with the intention of hurting you will not hurt you. If you're yourself 100% established in non-violence. Okay? Now, these are the things, you know, where with our limited intellectual capability, we are not able to understand these statements. I am not. And that's why I said, you know, there are some statements here which I don't fully understand. But that's because my intellect is very limited. And it is all the time driven by the ego. So my ego says something else as opposed to what this statement says here. Okay. But an example, you know, I always try to give this example. There is a very famous personality in our Hindu culture, and people from the Gujarat area, they know him very well. His name was Narayan Swami, Swami Narayan. Mm-hmm. Swami Narayan. When he was growing up, he left his home when he was maybe 8 or 9 years old, I believe, in search of truth. He was a small child, and he just left home in search of truth. And anybody seen that movie?
It was shown here in the...
Have you seen that?
Last temple, yeah.
You saw that movie, okay. So in that one, they show all that, you know. So this guy, this kid leaves home, and then he's just wandering on foot one village to the other and just talking to whoever he can meet for some wisdom. And also, even as a child, he started giving small talks based on his own understanding, and people started listening to him, etc., etc. And he would go from one village to the next, sleep under a tree or something, it doesn't matter, he didn't bother. And then he would eat whatever people would feed him. So when he went to one village, there, the people warned him that, look, this village is in the forest, and there's a very ferocious lion who lives in that forest, and he has the habit of coming into the village at night, and he does a lot of damage. If there's anybody outside at that time, he can kill the person. So, because this guy was already sleeping under a tree, and in most villages there is a tree with a little platform around it, and they can sleep on that. So he said, so they told him that, look, because of this situation, you're welcome to come into one of our homes and you sleep there. He said, look, you know, I don't care, and I've lived in my whole life in forest, and, you know, I'm okay. I'll just sleep here, it's okay. So he sleeps there. These people are very, very, really skeptical. You know, come when the morning arrives, they are certain that this guy would have been killed by the animal. So they come and walk to that tree and the platform under it. What do they see? This guy is sleeping there, and that lion is sleeping right next to him under his feet, as if he was a domesticated animal. And when all these people come around, they are obviously scared, but this animal just walks away very quietly back to his forest. That's exactly what they say. That because this kid was so deeply enshrined in non-violence, he did not believe in violence of any kind. That even that animal, who was a ferocious animal, dangerous animal, he got tamed in his presence. And they show that scene in that movie. Do you remember that? So I just saw that movie and I thought that's a very telling sequence. How does that happen? We don't know, because we are not there yet. That's why we don't understand all this. That's part of the whole thing, you know. We will, when we get there, we will understand all this. All the hostilities cease when you are fully, firmly established in non-violence. So here are some of the thoughts that I have picked up based on some of the commentaries that I've read on ahimsa. So like I mentioned, it's ahimsa or non-violence towards all living creatures, plants, animals, humans, environment. Okay, and what causes injury? What causes our tendency to cause injury? It's all the evil tendencies like selfishness, hatred, jealousy, anger, greed, etc. They're all responsible for our tendency to cause injury to others. That's why this whole practice of yoga will cleanse the mind, purify the mind of all these negative tendencies. When there are no negative tendency, they will not get any desire to hurt anybody. Right? To nourish one's own body with the flesh of another is violence. Now, this whole concept of ahimsa is the main reason why a large part of India's population is non-meat eaters. Very large part. I think the maximum percentage of those non-meat eaters are from the state of Gujarat, I would think, where these people are from. There is a very large population. Even where I grew up in Punjab, there's a very large population of non-meat eaters. I grew up completely as a non-meat eater. Just because the family was like that. It all stems from the fact that ahimsa or non-violence is a very key guideline in all our cultures. Whether it is, you know, if you look at the Jain culture, for example, Jain is another religious sect in India. They go to the extreme in terms of non-violence. Buddhists also very, very strong ahimsa. Same as in our culture. Bhagavad Gita, for example, even though Krishna says you kill everybody, and it still talks of ahimsa, non-violence. And you have to understand that dichotomy there. You have to understand that. All right, so that non-violence is a very strong component of our culture that we live in. And that's why I said, you know, the whole concept of not eating meat has come up, at least in our culture. Because eating meat involves killing animals. Killing means violence. Now, you know, one thing that I always kind of wondered if there's, you know, I look at the ancient texts from India. I have still to find an authentic text which says don't eat meat. I haven't come across any text yet.
But it's in the Ayurveda text too that meat could be medicinal.
Oh, I see. And does it say which kind of meat, or it depends on the ailment?
Depends on the ailment.
So there is some indication that you can eat meat. But that has a medicinal value, you're saying. But I'm saying as a normal food, to consume meat or not to consume meat, I have not seen any categorical statement in the text that I'm familiar with, Bhagavad Gita or the Yoga Sutras or some of the Upanishads that I've read, Ramayana, Mahabharata, none of these makes a statement that don't eat meat. In fact, in Ramayana, Ram was a meat eater. You know. So.
Yeah, that's where the question is goes back to this too. And we are talking about the flesh, but you know, I mean, we need food to survive. And so, is it life that we are talking about that has the violence and?
Well, to eat meat, you have to kill somebody. That's the main. I think the main theme is that you're killing, and killing involves violence. That's it.
Yeah, but I mean, we eat plants.
Say that again.
Even if we are vegetarian, we are not eating meat. But some people would consider plant as also living things.
Plants. Yeah. Again. Again, but the way they get around this whole concept of life is what is the level of consciousness that these life forms have attained. Plants are at the lowest level of consciousness, living consciousness. So you can eat plants. Otherwise, we cannot survive.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we cannot survive. Same thing, you know, if you're in the very coldest of countries, you know, like Alaska or some even colder, you have to eat fish or whatever, you know. Otherwise, you cannot survive.
I have to say that I'm just chomping at the bit because I'm a vegan and an animal rights supporter. And ahimsa, I'm a yoga teacher, and ahimsa is nonviolence, and there is no way that you can be nonviolent. And there's millions of animals a day that are tortured and murdered, and that includes in the dairy industry. So, I mean, they're tortured. So, I mean, if you want to eat meat, eat like a pedophile or something, Charles Manson or something, but leave the animals alone.
Good. Okay. So inflicting pain for one's own comfort is violence. So we can perform violence through action, thought, and
speech.
So the three forms of, in Sanskrit the words they use are manasa, vacha, kaya. Those are very commonly used words. Okay. So that's how you can inflict injury on others. And then I say that apply ahimsa not only to others but to yourself as well. Okay, so example is you can hurt yourself by overeating, for example. And we do that all the time. All the time we hurt ourselves. We cause all kinds of ailments, diseases in the body just by overstuffing yourself. Performing asana beyond your capability. A lot of people do that and a lot of people get injured.
How's your shoulder doing? No, I'm just kidding.
It's very... No, my shoulder is doing better, actually. Food wastage, you know, I thought is a form of violence against those who sleep hungry. It's just my thought. We waste so much food in this country, especially in the West. Just huge amount of food wastage, and I think it's violence, in my opinion. I think of it that way. Love involving demands and expectations entails violence, both to self and others. I think we all understand that. Emotional violence in relationships, harsh, abusive language, angry outbursts, emotional judgments, sarcasm, skillful manipulations. I think we understand all these things, but these are all forms of violence. You need to, you know, kind of contemplate and think about these things. And these are things we do all the time without even realizing that it is. It's
interesting that you've talked so much about ahimsa, but you've never talked about, like, this doesn't talk about forgiveness. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You
right.
say don't be hostile to others, but if somebody is hostile to you, there is no bullet point that says, oh, forgive them. That's part of the ahimsa deal.
No, you're absolutely right. I should add that, actually. It's a good thought. It's a good thought. Very good thought. It's a good observation. I'll add that.
I'm there.
No, that's very good. You know, forgiveness, accepting things as they are very, very important in life. Okay. Now, this one talks about satya. All right. So again, it's a short sutra. Is it okay to repeat? Satya pratishthayam.
Satya pratishthayam.
Kriya phala.
Kriya phala.
Ashrayatvam.
Ashrayatvam.
Okay. So satya pratishthayam.
Satya pratishthayam.
Kriya phala.
Kriya phala.
Ashrayatvam.
Ashrayatvam.
Now, again, these are some of the statements from Patanjali's list of attainments that you can get. Okay, that I don't fully understand. This is one of those things which I'm not very comfortable with in terms of understanding myself and therefore in explaining to you. So that's why I said in the beginning there are some areas where I have doubts. I'm going to share my doubts with you. Because I don't fully understand. So what it says is, to one established in truthfulness, actions and their results become subservient. That means you can almost wish for anything that to happen, and that will happen once you're totally established in truth. And the reason I don't understand, I tell myself, is because I'm not there yet. You know, maybe I'll understand when I'm totally established in truth. So what is truth? Truth is, you know, we always experience stuff in life, right? Whatever we experience, if we can express that without any salt and pepper, that's truth. But our tendency, our habit in general is to always add salt and pepper to whatever experience before we tell anybody. And that becomes a lie. Okay? Action that conveys reality as is, that is truth. Okay? Now, again, speech should not be deceptive, confused, equivocal, barren of meaning, or hurtful. Avoid unpleasant truth or pleasant untruth.
Okay, so now I'm confused. Because, so you just said to say the truth all the time.
Right.
I'll give you a situation, right? I teach. I have a student who is in 10th grade and can't do mental math, right? Can't do subtraction addition. So should I just be truthful and tell the student you're a moron, but
no.
not be nonviolent?
No. Don't tell him that you're a moron. Moron is a judgmental statement. Tell him that, you know, because you are not able to do this, you need to work on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but if I be very truthful about it, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that student will, how this student will take it.
Well, obviously, if you tell him that he's a moron, he'll probably stop coming to your class. But that's a judgmental statement. And you want to be, you know,
a
teacher.
That's a tact I took. I mean, the one that you just told is what I told the student is, hey, you know, this is not the state you need to be in. You need to be better than this. So we need to work on it. But
That's it. But you don't just tell him that you're a moron.
Not to add salt and pepper.
Unpleasant truth. Again, there is a statement in our scriptures which says that do not tell unpleasant truth. That's also from one of the Upanishads, actually.
Oh, my manager is going to have a fun time if I don't add salt and pepper.
Ego. Salt and pepper is ego. We want to avoid that. But this is a very important line, you know, where you should, the speech should not be deceptive or confused or have double meaning or banner of a meaning. I mean, sometimes people have the habit of saying things only to impress people, you know, use bombastic, big, long words which don't mean much in a situation. Okay, so all those things are there. Okay, so a simple example is, you know, we always add, when I say salt and pepper, you guys are facing this where somebody walks across that door and we hear the footsteps. And, you know, you're curious, you know, who was that walking by? And my tendency might be, oh, that was that stupid John. I mean, the truthful statement is it was John. But salt and pepper added is, oh, that stupid John. That's how we do it all the time. And I'm just giving a very silly example, but that's what we do all the time. We add our own little ego-based whatever comes up in the mind. All right? So give up luxury of imagination in favor of pure objectivity. We know that. False ego hides true voice of intuition. We keep repeating that statement all over and over again. It's the ego that hides our pure intuitive truth that we should be exposed to. When established in truth, fruit of action depends on the action of the yogi. That's the statement that, you know, I hope I will understand one of these days when I am a more truthful person. Right now I don't. Okay, so I think we can stop here. We normally like to close the eyes for 5 minutes before we stop. And it's a good time to do that. So I'm just going to make a mental note. We did up to 236, up to Satya. Okay, so that I know where to start next time.